Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for July 16th, 2018. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to review the Wimbledon Championships. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Make sure to hit them up for all your U.S. Open packages, which will be taking place next month in New York. So let's introduce our co-host, Parsa. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. What's going on?
Just grinding away, man. You know how it is. And, you know, enjoying the summer. Super, super hot here in Toronto. I'm pretty sure you're experiencing the same type of conditions in New York, because New York is even hotter than Toronto. And it's like...
And I think we're getting your rain tomorrow.
Yeah, it was super rainstorm here today. Thunder, everything. And, yeah, I mean, it's been super hot. It's been close to easily over 100 every day, like the last week. So, in your terms. For us, it's about 40. So... For us, it's about 40 Celsius. We've got slightly different metric systems. So with the weather out of the way, we got to wrap up the third major of the season, Parsa. Some unlikely champions, not the ones that we picked. You were kind of close. You were almost there. We had Angie Kerber winning her third major over Serena Williams in convincing fashion, 3-3. And then on the men's side, we had Novak Djokovic, a guy who around 40 days ago said that I'm not even going to probably play the grass court season, now wins his fourth Wimbledon title, 13th career major in convincing fashion over Kevin Anderson, who's now made two Grand Slam finals as well as the U.S. Open last year, beat him in straights, I believe it was, 2-2-6, something like that. So yeah, it was a good fortnight, like you said very eloquently before we got on air, you were talking about it. Really pretty boring first week, super entertaining second week, which is kind of the way that you want to build it up. But I think next year I know we had a little bit of a discrepancy in our last podcast on this, but I think with going to 16 seeds next year, you're going to see a lot of action maybe in the first week, and you'll see it'll be okay in the second as well too. But it's interesting, you know, before we get into the women's, and we're also going to talk about a couple other things this week. It's, you know, when you look at these type of tournaments, it's amazing how, you know, five set formats and like how much, you know, these matches can drag on into the second week. And when you have, you know, 16 seeds, I think you're going to see, you know, some better matches in the early rounds. But, you know, when you look at the last 16 years at Wimbledon, who's won these tournaments, Parsa? Federer, Djokovic, Murray, right, and Nadal. So the cream is always going to rise to the top, at least on the men's side, and that's not no disrespect to the women's, but on the women's side, you know, there's been a lot of you know, here and there, just because Serena hasn't been around for a bit, and then we've seen some other ladies come in and clean up. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that develops. But getting now to the women's side, Angie Kerber, I mean, I'm really becoming a fan. You know what I mean? I think she's really doing some good stuff. I mean, she's such a kind of like a little bit more of a powerful, with more angles, you know, Radwanska kind of player. You know what I'm saying? A little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, got the lefty feel. But I mean, she just keeps pulling you off court. And I think the biggest thing I saw in the finals, and I'd love for you to jump in on this, is that, you know, she just moves better than Serena at this point. And I think that was the biggest difference there. I don't know, what were your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, and I think her deflection is what's incredible. And so her best defense was stronger than Serena's best offense. And so she was always able to counteract whatever Serena was throwing at her. And Serena couldn't get to that level that we're used to seeing Serena. I'll be honest. I mean, Kerber is the outright number one in the world. We don't even know if Serena could ever get back to that level.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where she used to kick it up into another gear and get super aggressive with her serve or with a return, and used to dictate and dominate with her physical presence. She's not able to do that yet. But I think by the U.S. Open, she's going to be very, very strong.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, I think I don't know what her summer schedule looks like. It looks like there's a new tournament in San Jose, right? Did I see that right?
Yeah, I think I guess so.
Yeah, and then there's also, I don't know if she's going to play Montreal, but I think she's playing Cincy. So I think she'll probably, she's not going to do three events. It's I would highly doubt that at this stage in the game. So yeah, if she plays well in those two events, doesn't really need, I mean, like, I think it's a fitness thing for her right now. And if she gets those things, worked out, just get a little bit fitter and get that movement 100%, because she's hitting the ball super clean. Played a really good fortnight. Really nice to see her back there. And it was interesting because how many times have we seen her win a major? 23 times. I haven't seen her, for the most part, from what I can remember, that emotional. But you saw her almost crying in on that on-court ceremony where she lost. And that was interesting for me, because maybe it's motherhood or perspective, or she said as well too early in the event that you learn more from your losses than you do your victories. And when you're that great of a champion, her 30th Grand Slam final, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, which is a fantastic record. You're going 23 for 30. Now, I think this is her 30th or 31st. I'm not sure, but that's still an amazing record. Yeah, it hurts. And, she doesn't want to lose. And, everybody wants to win that Wimbledon final once you get to it, right? And it's one of those things where it's great to have her back at that level, because we see somebody like Sharapova. I mean, she lost in the first round. And, she's hungry as anybody out there, and she's not getting it done. So what are your thoughts now on, as we move forward, women's hard courts before we get into the men's? Do you think that Serena is going to be a force? Is Kerber, because Kerber won the U.S. Open as well too. She's great.
Absolutely.
She hits a really good flat ball, great defense. She's improved her serve as well since we've seen her in 2016 when she won in Flushing. So
that makes a big difference.
Yeah. And so she's made an upgrade. So what do you think, what are some of the storylines on the women's side that you're going to be looking forward to as we get into the summer?
It's going to be that race. You named it. Look at the four emerging. It would be, there's more than four emerging, I guess. It's the one wild card, I think, is going to be whoever's hot going into it. But then I think you're going to have Serena, Kerber, and who else would you put there, Nima, as your third person or your fourth person?
Well, I mean, I think you got to definitely, you got Sloane Stephens, who won the U.S. Open last year. We'll see how she rebounds on the hard court. It's such a neutral surface, right, that everybody pretty much becomes comfortable, unless you're an ultra clay court player.
Well, I guess Halep would be the next person.
Halep is there. Svitolina can play well on hard courts, although she hasn't shined at the slams. We spoke about that in a couple previous shows. Madison Keys, Muguruza. These are players that have...
So I think there's like eight or nine favorites on the women's side.
Yeah.
And I think they're all even. And so the whole summer you're going to be watching is like who emerges as the favorite.
Yes.
Who's showing the best signs. So
for sure.
I think the women's game is looking up towards U.S. Open, which is great.
Yes.
What did you think about the men's final?
Great, great segue into it. You know what, man? The final, I thought it was terrible. I mean, I liked the storylines, around the finals, where you had, Kevin Anderson, such a workhorse, such a testament to just working hard in life.
Awesome, super fit dude, huh?
Super, super, super fit guy. I mean, this guy, how many hours did he play, man? He's just like, keeps going. And he didn't look, he was tired in the finals, but he was composed. I just thought that, he's like, he's one of those guys who has to manufacture stuff that happens for him, like his come-ons, and he had the sports psychologist, and then he got super fit. He's a big body to lug around that court. 6'8" is not a joke. I don't know how that feels, but nevertheless, I can imagine. And it's one of those things where you got to give him a lot of props. I mean, this guy made the U.S. Open finals as well, and I believe he made fourth round of the French, So he's been there, man. He's been doing some good stuff in the last year. And he's what? He's inching closer to 30. Remember, this guy played 3 years of college tennis. I mean, like, that's you got to give the guy credit for that. And I think that you're going to see him definitely put forth a good summer. I think he's motivated to go. He knows that this is his window right now. You know, you got, who knows what's going on with Fed at this stage. Djokovic looks like he's hot. Nadal looks like he's playing well. We'll get into that. And then you got guys like Delpo, Zarev, who's going to want to do some damage on the hard courts. I would probably say, you know, that would round it out for me. And, I mean, I'm not going to include Kyrgios at this point because I don't know what he's up to. But the thing
and
is...
What about the 800th player in the world, Andy Murray?
Andy Murray. Yeah, I mean, I know he's got a wild card into the Rogers, so hopefully he's going to be fit to go. I think he'll play. He'll play two or three events in the summer. They're best of three. Hard courts is going to be a challenge, I'll tell you, man. I mean, on that hip, that's at that level of intensity, you know, one of the most grueling sports in the world, as we know, tennis. I mean, we're just coaching and our bodies hurt, let alone these guys. We're playing super intense points. Washington is 120. Toronto's been super hot this summer. You go to Cincy, it's a, you know, it's a sauna. And then New York. Last year, it was cool. I remember I was down there. You know what I mean? But every other year, it's been super hot. And I think that's the kind of vibe that we're getting for this year as well. So we'll see how it transpires. But, you know, looking at the dynamics of the tournament, I mean, Djokovic did what he needed to do to win that title. We knew that the winner of the Nadal, Djokovic, was probably going to win, which is exactly what happened. And he just did what he needed to do. He served well. His returns right there. He's playing really well. I mean, the two standout matches without a shadow of a doubt were Nadal Del Potro was an awesome match. Both guys deserve to win. And same with Nadal Djokovic, which was super entertaining. And very happy with Nadal. And I want you to get into that. And then I would put my third match would be probably Federer and Anderson. Not necessarily for the quality of tennis, but again, Anderson down two sets to love, down in the tiebreaker, saves a match point against a guy who's won this tournament eight times, who's had a really good year, and probably would go at least to the finals, you know, if he had, you know, won that match. I think he would have beat Isner in the semis. And then which we got to give him a shout out as well too. So what were your thoughts on that? I mean, first let's talk about, forget about the finals because, you know, there's not much to say there. What did you feel about, you know, the dynamics of the semis between Nadal and Djokovic? Because you had a good analysis as to why you think Djokovic ended up winning. And then as well with the Delpo and Nadal match. And then we'll talk about Fed.
Yeah. So, you know, I think before the tournament, I had Djokovic beating Nadal in the semifinals in our podcast. And the reason I had was because I felt like Djokovic was building momentum, and we knew what we had from Nadal coming off the French Open. He's playing unbelievable at an extremely high level. And usually when that happens in the past, that's how we get Djokovic's best level, is when he's playing Nadal. So I had felt like, maybe this is the tournament where Djokovic is going to come back and be Djokovic again. And, you know, he felt that little villainous role early in the first week, and people would jeer him. And so he started to build that intensity. And it got to the Nadal battle, and he outdueled Rafael Nadal, who's playing, we all know, I believe, at a very high level. So that makes Djokovic a very high level. And I felt like that was it. So, and then he took it, you know, to the next level by winning the whole thing. I mean, that's incredible.
Amazing. And I think that now, do you think, because we've seen a bunch of Nadal Djokovic finals in New York, is that something? Because I don't think Djokovic, I think he's 10 in the world now, so he's moved up quite a bit. He was, what, 20, 21, 22 coming into Wimbledon. So even if he's probably going to play, I know he's playing Toronto for sure because he's booked his hotel, probably will play Cincy. If he wins both of those, because he has zero, another thing, man, here, he's got 0 points to defend until the end of the season. Probably one of the best hardcourt players arguably ever. 0 points to defend, plays really well in the summer, and plays really well in the fall. This guy can gain. He's got 4 Masters, 1 Major, 2 are finals. What is that? 2,000, 6,000, 7,500 points. He could finish number one this year. I'm not saying he's going to win everything, but he's got a lot of room there to do some serious damage.
Yeah, he definitely does, and he looks like he's going to.
Yeah, I think so. And for the record, and I linked this after the finals, I had said at the end of last year, when I did my top 10 for the end of this year, that I thought Djokovic was going to end number one this year. And now I'm starting to look like a smart guy again, which is good. We'll see how it transpires. But great to have him back. I think this is again, it's nice to see these champions, the Serenas, Djokovic's with kids, and you can see they're playing for a little bit more, and it's a good vibe. I like it. I'm into it. And then obviously a guy who has 4 kids is Roger Federer. And Parsa, we got to talk about RF. Obviously, we talked in depth about the Uniqlo stuff, and he's got that, transformation there with his clothing brand. See what happens in the future with that. So financially, we know he's better off than everybody. Game-wise, again, I got to go back to this, right? Loses the Indian Wells final to Delpo, has match points. Loses 7-6 in the third as well to Kokkinakis, right, in Miami. 7-6 in the third, pulls the plug on the entire clay court season, comes back in Stuttgart, wins the event, struggles at the beginning against Misha Zverev, has a pretty relatively easy draw. He has some good guys. Raonic was in his way and stuff, wins that. Doesn't play well in Holly at all. Should have pretty much lost to Pear, but he didn't. Gets through that. Čorić tunes him in the finals. Comes into Wimbledon. Rolls everybody through the first 4 rounds. Then he gets up against Anderson. He's up 2 sets to love. Loses the match after holding match points to a guy. And then, so, Parsa, is this... We got to be smart here, man, because I think this is where people really want to see what our analysis is all about. Is this a physical thing? Because he looks to me like he's in good shape. Doesn't look like he's hitting the ball any slower. Doesn't look like he was moving any worse. Is it just a focus thing? He really should have closed out Anderson in straights, man. I know Anderson, credit to him. He stood there. He took it. He pumped, let's go after every point. Serving bombs, 130, 135. But what happened? And then is this now, we got to talk about it because this guy's going to be 37 in a couple of weeks, right? Is this now the beginning of the end for Federer?
It's not because... He would have to convert. If he converted that match point, we could be talking about Roger Federer, holding another Wimbledon title.
Exactly.
So that's why. So if someone at his age now is able to extend them to a certain amount of time,
yes,
he definitely is not as effective. His game is only, let's say, 3% effective comparatively. Mm. But now you make him tired. Now he becomes a 50-50 player.
Yes.
And anything can happen. And that's exactly what's happening. So... the play is definitely to try to get Federer tired and in a physical battle, which is why he doesn't play the clay, which makes sense.
Yes.
But even on a hard court or a grass court, he's got to play near flawless tennis. And he's shown, even at his elevated age with less powerful movement, he's able to play this aggressive game that lends itself to playing these shorter type matches every other day. I think he's shown, if anything, most vulnerable in the Master Series, the 2 out of 3 set type things, because he gets into these 7-6 sets very easily.
Yeah.
Because he could be out of shape and he'll go 7-6 with anyone at any time, probably when he's 50 years old. So,
yeah.
He's just that kind of talent. And that's where I think it ultimately is a change for Federer, is that he has to be at the A++ level all the time in order to win the tournament. And, the more these guys come back, Djokovic comes back, if Murray gets healthy, and Kyrgios keeps coming up, and Zverev is hungry, these things mean Federer's starting to be pushed on the outside, unless he plays incredible tennis for 7 matches. That's what has to happen.
Yeah, and for me, I think that something, people are like, okay, so he didn't play the clay, so now he played 3 grass events. And, the thing is, because everything is pushed back a week, Rogers Cup is in 2 weeks, man. it's not that far away. Wimbledon just ended yesterday, right? So it's like there's not a lot of time to regroup, and it looks like he's playing the Rogers Cup. Since you know he's had good and that's the thing, like, I just don't know if he has enough left in the tank at this stage to play Toronto, to play Cincy, week off, and then go to New York for 2 weeks and try to win that event. I just don't see that happening. The only way I can see it happening, to be quite honest with you, is he doesn't play the clay, takes out one grass. Now he lost a little bit earlier in Wimbledon, so I think kind of, you know, that bodes well for him now for the hard courts. But I don't know. I don't see him winning the U.S. Open. I would, right now, as of this today, I put Federer as my fifth favorite to win the U.S. Open. That's, I would put Djokovic ahead of him. I would put Nadal ahead of him. I would put Del Potro ahead of him. Maybe Zverev, maybe. Just, but he's a good heart. Maybe even an Anderson. I mean, the guy's a good heart. I mean, made U.S. Open finals last year. We know Federer had that back issue. That's just my opinion. But I mean, like you said, this guy's that kind of a talent that he can get it done, right? So.
And it depends on his draw too.
Absolutely, but he had a good draw at Wimbledon, man. Anderson is not that bad of a draw to play Isner. These guys are not natural grass court players. You know what I'm saying? Like. It's, I mean, imagine you had to play Djokovic or Nadal or Mert. Like, there's a lot of tougher guys out there, man. You know, Gilles Mueller, like, that guy's a grass court player. Karlovich, he had a pretty easy draw, man. I mean, destroyed Manorino, my boy, before that. Before, you know, he was pretty much walking through the event. He's rolling everybody, and then he was up two sets. He played amazing in the first set against Anderson. And then after that, he kind of, you know, he faded away after this, you know, the one second set. So we'll see, but it's going to be an interesting hardcourt season. Happy, and you know that everybody's coming to my neck of the woods, about 15 minutes away from my house, so I'll be down there. Yeah, check that out in a few weeks, and then later on to the hardcourts in New York, as we usually check out. So before we wrap up this week's show, Parsa, I got to talk about something that wreaked havoc, because, you know, Charles, you know, one of our staff writers who's been on board for many, many years now, he wrote an article today that even Wimbledon makes mistakes, and they did. You know what I mean? And they, like, you look at the schedule of play Friday, you got Anderson and Isner playing till what, 26-24 in the fifth set, 6 hours and 36 minutes. Absurd tennis, especially for two guys who basically just have really good serves. Then you get Nadal and Djokovic rolling in, playing till 11 p.m. They got a curfew there. Obviously, stuff you're never going to see like at the U.S. Open. They'll let these guys play until 1 in the morning, right? They got a curfew, kick him out right after the third set. They come back, play Nadal, wins the fourth and then the fifth. Then the women's final gets pushed back. Winner of that Djokovic-Nadal will then have to come back the next day and play Anderson, who's already gassed because he played almost 7 hours the day before. You got to put, like, first of all, how much, like, you know how some people are like, oh, you know, men should play best two out of three in majors. I think that's garbage. They should definitely play five. But is the U.S. Open that much less of a Grand Slam because it has a breaker in the fifth set? Then, you know, like, what? Because that's going to have a lot of drama too, right? You got that the sudden death thing now. A lot of people are saying, you know, do a tiebreaker at 9-all. Do one at 12-all. Do you need to go to 26-24? I don't know. I mean, what are your thoughts? Like, what do you think is a realistic number for these on the men's side, even the women's, because the women's don't have, but they're playing best of three, but they don't have a breaker either. But I think, do we really need to see more than 8-all in the fifth set? I don't know. If two players are getting to 8-all in the fifth set, you've already watched at least 4.5 hours of tennis, right? So how much more tennis do you need to see? 6.5 hours of tennis?
And I frankly think it's like the five setters, they've been getting longer because the people's tactics, their strengths are they're playing them for higher percentages.
Yes.
They're able to execute them. And so
yeah, exactly.
It's even. And we've we've already figured out, but both of us have our tactic, and neither one of us is going to budge. So until one of us really gets tired and starts to do one thing a little bit worse, that's what's determining the match instead of greatness. So I think if it's a tiebreak, it saves the guys for the next rounds, but it also, it brings that excitement, and it's a true finish. So whoever wins 3 out of 5 sets, which we play sets to at 6-all, we play tiebreak, wins the match. You know, there doesn't need to be that extended play anymore. And fair enough. Just let's go. You know, let's rumble. Get away from this absurdness of watching service games. And in a time where viewership is it's a great story.
Yes.
But at some point it becomes difficult to watch. You know, and so for the people that really need to see it. And want to see it, and will make time to see it. You know, to ask them to stay around for an extra 2 hours is, it's already a lot for a 4-hour match, let alone a 6-hour one.
Because you basically had Anderson and Isner playing 9 sets.
Right.
Like, what is? They don't need to. That's for me. It just doesn't make sense. It's become obsolete, is what I'm trying to say. It's not necessary because tennis is that much more physical. I mean, just turn the page, man. How many guys are getting injured? How many men and women are getting injured? Why do you need these guys, these players to play for 7 hours, 6 hours? They don't need to do. They're playing enough, man. Like it's just become crazy, and they definitely need to address that immediately. And I would be 100% for breakers in the fifth set at all the majors. Just uniform it, 100% keep the men at 5. It's awesome, but they've already played 5 sets. Now they're at the conclusion of the fifth set. Play breaker, whoever wins, fantastic. Worst case scenario, go to 8-all. Go to 12-all. I mean, that's the absolute, absolute maximum, especially with 2 big servers. You know, in the back in the day, we had like Safin and Lubicic.
If you made me go at a number more than 6-all, I'd go to 8-all. That's it.
Exactly.
Beyond 8-all, it's like...
If they get to 8-all, that's already an epic match, man.
They don't need to, though. Yeah. What difference does it make? Just do it at 6-all. Yeah. Let's get ready to rumble. Like a regular set. Why
exactly. Yeah, and if anything, if we're looking for more drama, that's more pressure. You know that's coming, and get it done. So, anyways, we'll see what the, the ITF, ATP, WTA, everybody's got to come together. As we know, there's a lot of different governing bodies a lot of moving pieces in the world of tennis, and... we'll see how that transpires. But as we look forward to the hard court swing, what do we have this week, Parsel? We have some events in Gstaad, Bastad. We got Newport, that cool event there. We have Umag. We have, all these events. Bucharest, I believe there's a WTA event. And we have some, it's basically like this weird time of year where we have these clay events, Hamburg, stuff like, you know what I mean? And then it gets into the Washingtons and stuff like that, which is great. And then there's Toronto, Montreal, Cincy, Winston-Salem, stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a good summer on the hard courts, and then which culminates in NYC, one of the best cities in the world, which you know very well. And we'll see how that transpires. So if you have any closing words, we'll just wrap it up for this week, Parson. You got anything for everybody out there?
I'm good. I think it's just a great time to watch how this all unfolds and pick out those dark horses. You're going to see the favorites are going to start to emerge. So I think it's an exciting summer ahead.
Absolutely. Okay, so Parson and I will be back in about 3 weeks' time to preview the Rogers Cup from both Toronto and Montreal. In the meantime, you can check out Parsa at ParsaSammy on Instagram and Twitter. You can check myself out on the same social media platforms at Tennis Connected. Also, make sure to check out TennisConnected.com. Download this podcast on iTunes. And finally, a big shout out to our sponsor here, Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Make sure to hit them up for all your ticket and traveling needs to the U.S. Open. Parsa, once again, thanks again for joining us this week.
Thank you.
Everybody, have a great week, and we'll chat with you in a few weeks' time.